Welcome to Inside the Bear's Den. Now, here's Jason Alvin.
Good evening, and what's going on, Northern Colorado Bears fans? Jason Alvin back with you for another edition of Inside the Bear's Den, where we take a look at all things Northern Colorado athletics. We'll touch on some wrestling, some volleyball here today, soccer as well, and we also like to look around the Big Sky Conference and with basketball season just having come to a close. None other joining us now, our friend Larry Weir, Eastern Washington play-by-play. Some big news that we'll get to here in a bit out of Cheney, Larry, but appreciate you taking the time to join us once again today.
Absolutely, Jason. Happy to do it.
Larry, let's start with Eastern Washington, their performance in the Big Sky Conference tournament. I think maybe that game against Idaho State there where they stumbled in earning the regular season crown may have kind of motivated them a little bit more and been the, I don't want to say the extra motivator to get that team over the top because they played well all, pretty much all season long, but that surprise loss may have given them the extra focus they needed there in the Big Sky Conference tournament.
I kind of call it a hitting a reset button, Jason. They were feeling pretty good about themselves and were riding high, had a 9-game winning streak, and maybe they started thinking they were a little invincible. And then they ran into Idaho State, and the Bengals showed them that they weren't. They had to play good basketball. They had to come focused each game to play, and maybe they lost that focus a little bit, especially after some pretty emotional wins over Montana. So that kind of snapped them to attention a little bit, I think, and got them especially thinking about defense again. And that's what kind of propelled them, I think, into the Big Sky Conference tournament and then through the tournament into the NCAA tournament last week.
Well, I think the NCAA tournament we'll get to in a second. But you mentioned that Big Sky Conference tournament. Again, an early kind of scare game from Northern Arizona, 6-point win there in the quarterfinals. And then just an absolute domination of Montana, of which the likes you haven't seen a lot over that team, that Montana team, especially when the stakes are that high. And then the 20-5 start against Montana State in the Big Sky Conference Championship had to feel good to give them a little bit of breathing room. But when they needed to put it all together in that Big Sky Conference tournament, I thought they rose to the occasion each and every time that they were called upon.
Yeah, I think you're right with that. You know, Northern Arizona played a really good ball game, and they had played well against Portland State the game before that. So Northern Arizona had nothing to lose in that tournament. They came in as the next last place team in the conference. And so they came in, played very well against Portland State, and then kept it going against Eastern Washington the next game. And you're right. The starts then after that against both Montana and Montana State were crucial to those games, especially the Montana State game, because NSU made it a little bit like the NAU game for Eastern. And if Eastern hadn't had that big lead, they might have been in some big danger in that game. I don't think there was much Montana could have done to make it a competitive game. But if Montana State had started better, that would have been a really good game in that Big Sky Conference championship game.
They go on to win the Big Sky Conference championship, get the 14 seed overall in the NCAA tournament against Kansas, one of the Blue Bloods. And, you know, call it what you will, but eyes were opened on last Saturday with the Groves brothers, with Eastern Washington, with Shante Leggins. Everything really came to focus despite the 93-84 loss. I think the nation took notice of what's going on Eastern basketball or Eastern Washington basketball wise there in Cheney.
Yeah, I think so. You know, they played very well as far as, you know, I think with that Kansas game, probably what you could say is Kansas won that game. Eastern didn't lose it with poor play in some way, shape, or form. They ended up, Kansas needed to shoot the ball better than what they normally do. McCormick, their big guy, had to play more and better, I think, than what people thought that he'd be able to play in order for Kansas to win that game. Eastern shot the ball well. They battled even with them on the rebounds. They did everything except probably take care of the ball. They'd like to have had a few less turnovers or maybe forced a few more turnovers from Kansas in that ball game. But Eastern played pretty well in that game, and there's definitely nothing that they can hang their heads about in that ball game.
the Groves brothers entered the national scene, something that, no surprise to us with Tanner being the Big Sky Player of the Year. Jacob, a guy that's really developed throughout the season into a huge force for Eastern Washington. They combined for 58 in that game, 35 from Tanner, 23 from Jacob. And the range and the versatility of Tanner Groves' game, I think, is what really kind of captivated national audiences, and got the big guys that can step out and hit the three as well as he can are kind of a new breed here for college basketball. Talk a little bit about his performance and how it kind of vaulted him into national prominence.
Yeah, you know, it's, if nothing else, just the memes and everything that came out of that whole thing with Tanner and Will Ferrell as Jackie Moon, or Jacob in the Napoleon Dynamite situation. You know, it just was a lot of fun to watch some of that kind of stuff. But you're right. I mean, these two guys, you know, if you want to have your best game on the biggest stage, they most definitely did that and opened a lot of eyeballs, whether it's for Eastern Washington University next season or for somebody else who might have an opportunity to get their services for next season. So, you know, both guys are interesting prospects. They're both late bloomers. They both are very versatile offensively, and they both need to gain strength and experience still. But you know, what a ball game to really kind of put the national eyes on you a little bit, and you know, now if you had the name, image, and likeness in place already, I'm sure those two guys would have would be benefiting financially from that performance at this point in time, but it might be a little early for that.
I think there's no question, as you mentioned, one of the best things I saw was the meme of Jackie Moon and Napoleon Dynamite there, but they came out, and we know in the Big Sky Conference those two guys can play at a very high level, but you alluded to something there that that really is kind of maybe taking the Big Sky by storm here this season. Northern Colorado has 5 in the transfer portal. Idaho's had 6. Jacob Davison just entered his name into the transfer portal. How has that played into, you know, the philosophy of Eastern Washington for recruiting, but also just the ability? Now you thought you may have this powerhouse team back. Now Jacob Davison's gone, and we'll get to the even bigger news here in a little bit, but Jacob Davison entering his name into the transfer portal. How does that affect how Eastern Washington returns next year?
I don't think it affects too much, Jason. And I was a little surprised that Jacob put his name into the portal. He's a fifth-year guy. It's not as though he is an NBA prospect. And so why not go get a deal in Europe and start making money rather than going back for a sixth year of college? And he's not a he's a smart kid, but he's not a good student, let's say. He's an average student. He's a better than a 3.0, but he's not a 3.8 or 3.9 guy that's trying for master's degrees and is, you know, taking some incredible major or something like that, that a master's degree might help him. So I was a little surprised that he entered the portal, having played in the NCAA tournament. That was a goal of his, to play in the tournament. So I thought for sure he'd go overseas. So him being in the portal really doesn't strike any, you know, I don't think it hurts Eastern at all for next year. And as far as Eastern goes in their recruiting and their philosophy, they are one of the few schools across the nation that doesn't take transfers. And everybody there was a freshman at one point in time in their career. So this was a school that would take a kid and develop him over 4 or 5 years, graduate him and move into the professional rank or into a professional life if he wasn't going to play basketball for a living. So this is going to be very interesting, this transfer portal. And I think it's going to be very difficult for Big Sky Conference schools and other low to mid-major schools to keep their key players, because if you get guys like the Groves brothers that were late bloomers that didn't really get recruited very much now, and if they shine on the national stage as those guys did, the thought is going to be, well, I wonder if I could do this at a higher level. And we've seen it today with Cam Shelton from Northern Arizona going into the transfer portal. They've already lost Luke Abdalovich, and so it's not. A lot of times in the transfer portal, you get the guys at the end of the bench that are looking for a place to be able to go and play. And, you know, nowadays in the transfer portal, I think what you're going to get are key players from low to mid-major teams that are looking to move up into maybe the Power Five conferences. So it's going to be very hard, I think, for Big Sky Conference schools to keep their stars, in the, you know, going forward.
And that's a great point. And we see it on the flip side of things with a team like Weber State this year, where they ingrained so many high-level transfers and played very well. So it is interesting because Eastern's a team that has traditionally not recruited transfers and had them in their program, but that will be changing now with the huge news coming out yesterday. Really no surprise when you've seen what Shante Leggins has done there at Eastern, that that he takes a job at Portland there in the West Coast Conference. Obviously, huge, huge blow for Eastern Washington to lose Coach Leggins. Talk a little bit about his legacy, what he's left, and how do you envision this program moving forward without his leadership?
Well, that's going to be a complicated question. Yeah, I mean, it's the only place he's ever coached. He met his wife here. It's the only place that his wife has ever lived in America. She's from Serbia, came to Eastern to play basketball. They met when Shante was a young assistant coach, and his wife Tatiana was a player at Eastern. So, you know, he met his wife here. It's the only place that she's lived. They started their family here. So for them, I'm sure it was a difficult decision, but they threw a lot of money at him. And so you just can't turn that kind of thing down. You know, he probably quadrupled his salary at Eastern by going to the University of Portland. They want to make a splash at Portland. They want to start to they understand they've got to spend some money in order to be able to compete in the West Coast Conference. And so they identified their guy and they went and got him. So congratulations to him. Now, what does that do to Eastern? Well, in the old days, you had some protections. As if somebody had redshirted and you know, and hadn't graduated, then they were stuck at the school they were in unless you wanted to lose a year of eligibility by sitting out a year. Nowadays, with the with the way the rules are going, with the one-time transfer coming around at some point in time, it looks like you know, basically the whole Eastern team could end up at Portland next year, and there's nothing the Eastern could do about it if that's, you know, what these players wanted to do. So it's, you know, in the old days, Kim Akin Jr., who's redshirted, would have had to basically to stay at Eastern. And some of the other guys that have redshirted that have played, you know, that are key players, Tanner Groves would have had to stay at Eastern. You know, Jacob Groves didn't redshirt, so he would have been able to take a redshirt and move on. Same thing with Jacob Groves. So Tyler Robertson also, if I didn't mention his name. So at any rate, kind of long story short and probably a little disjointed here in my telling of it, it's whatever protections the university had at one point in time, and I don't want anybody to get me wrong, I'm all for students being able to transfer, but when you lose a coach in this particular situation, the university had some protections with the rules to be able to keep some of their players, and it looks like those are going to be going away, and so Eastern could have a completely new team next year, or they could have a bunch of their guys back. It's going to depend some on who they hire as a head coach, and it's going to depend some on these players, and do they want to stay even if the coach is familiar to them? Do they want to go with Shante because he's the guy that recruited them?
Well, it is one of those big questions because I think we all know if they bring their guys back, and with the performance that was put out on Saturday against Kansas, I think you and I can agree that preseason number one, it'd be pretty hard not to check the Eastern Washington box there for this Eagles team if they are able to bring back all their players. Regardless, Shante is a huge part of that, but with the experience that they have returning, the Groves brothers, Kim Akin, Tyler Robertson, as you mentioned, a huge, huge core returning, Michael Meadows as well. I think they would be the team that would sit atop the Big Sky Conference next year if they choose to return, which is a huge decision for all of them.
Yeah, exactly. I think they are the odds, or would be the odds-on favorite if everybody comes back, even if the majority of them come back. You know, if out of the eight key players back, if six or seven of them return, I think they'd still be the favorite in this conference. They've got a really good recruiting class coming in, and again, those kids are, you know, they'll be free to go if that's what they want to do. So if they can get the majority of the guys back, I don't think there's any doubt that they'll be favored to win the conference next year. But if they, you know, if everything goes haywire here and people start leaving the ship, then, you know, who knows what will happen. And in the end, I think at the conference, because, you know, what was the story that I read, that the Pac-12 has 14 shares from this year's tournament already? And that translates to, I think it was $25 million over the next 6 years to the conference just from this year's tournament. And the Big Sky's not going to get, you know, six, five teams in the tournament or whatever it is and win a bunch of games like that. But if you can get one team in and they can win a game or two and you can get a little bit more money coming into the conference, that would be a huge deal for the Big Sky and all the schools. And so if your team that probably had the best opportunity to win a game in the tournament ends up losing most of their guys, then it looks like the league is going to be another one game and out deal. Then we just, you know, it's kind of a perpetual losing type situation where about every time it looks like you can climb out of a hole, you lose your handhold and bam, down you go back down into the hole again. So it's tough for the league and it's difficult for everybody, I think, within the league with this situation.
Final question for you. Way too early, Big Sky Men's Basketball Scouting Report. We just talked about Eastern. Who's a team that you think, given where things stand right now today, March 23rd, what's one of the other teams that you think will make some noise next year in the Big Sky Conference?
If everybody keeps the guys they have and there's no further defections out of the Big Sky, I'll give you a handful of teams. I think Northern Colorado, especially with the McNeese State transfer that just came in, I think with, you know, Bodie Hume and the guys coming back into that program, and I don't know how many of the seniors are coming back as well, but I would think that Northern Colorado is going to have a shot. I would think Montana State with Bello, and I don't know what Adamu is going to do, and I don't know what Xavier Bishop is going to do, but they have some, you know, good young players at Montana State, and they made it the conference championship game this year. So I'd have to be looking at them. Montana, if they can keep their young guys going, whether it was Kyle Owens or Beasley or Josh Bannon or some of these other guys they have, I would think they have to be in the conversation. Weber State, if a lot of these seniors come back, if Isaiah Brown and Bassett and some of these other fellows come back and play another senior season, just with what they had, I would think they would need to be mentioned in this as well. And same goes for Southern Utah. They were the regular season champs this year. If they can retain their team and bring most of the guys back that are supposed to come back and maybe keep a senior or two, then obviously you have to put them in the conversation as well. I just don't know whether we're going to see everybody with their team back next year. I think that I'm going to be really interested, Jason, to watch this transfer portal over the next month and see just exactly who shows up in this transfer portal from around the Big Sky. I don't anticipate anybody not being affected, or everybody. I think everybody's going to be affected in some way. Some schools may be affected more than others.
I completely agree with you. It will be something where you keep refreshing your phone pretty often there. If you're head coaches, if you're guys like us, checking to see things throughout the season. Larry, obviously a great year for Eastern Washington. Got to be fun calling that game on Saturday. And we appreciate your time here joining us today inside the Bears Den.
It was a ball, Jason. It was a lot of fun. I hope you get a chance to do it as well very soon. And thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Larry, we are right here inside the Bears Den. We'll continue with more right here on 1310 KFKA. We continue on this edition of Inside the Bears Den, joined now by Bears head wrestling coach Troy Nickerson. Coach, a lot of seasons over there still getting started there. You got soccer underway, but yours wrapped up at the NCAA championships. First and foremost, your thoughts on grinding and grueling your way through this difficult campaign with all the protocols and stops. Just how proud of your guys to making it to the finish line there at the NCAA championships.
Yeah, I mean, I'm certainly proud of them. You know, we knew this year was going to be a challenge and a struggle and kind of, you know, a lot of uncertainty throughout the entire season, you know. So our main mission, you know, as Division I coaches throughout the, you know, the whole landscape was to start a season and to finish it and to get to the end, you know, have no hiccups at the national tournament, you know, completely 100% clean as far as COVID goes, you know, it was definitely a relief and, you know, just really proud of our team and in general, just being able to, you know, really, you know, take those extra precautions to make sure we stayed safe as a program, you know, for the majority of the year.
You look at it, you took four down to the national tournament. Unfortunately, Andrew Larris had to withdraw with injury for that. But just, you know, give us a breakdown on what you thought about the three guys that did compete down there at nationals and what they took away from their opportunity there at the championships.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's a tough tournament. I mean, it is the Super Bowl of our sport, you know, in this country. So, you know, Allen, Clothier and Jackson Haymauer, I mean, you know, they had pretty decent performances. You know, they've been to the tournament before. They've seen it. They kind of knew what to expect. Both came up a little bit short, but were able to both win matches at the tournament. Moses Schwartz, it was his first time at the tournament with last year being canceled, you know, and that first season is always a challenge, you know. I mean, the atmosphere in the national championship is just different, and you know, he certainly struggled a little bit, but you know, I'm just glad he had the opportunity to go out and compete in that type of venue in that arena and, you know, just really get a feel for it. I mean, he's young and he has plenty of time left, so we're excited for him in the future.
Well, you mentioned that the youth with him and also Andrew Alaris that wasn't able to compete down there, but both of those guys had big summers. We talked about that a while back on this show, but the next step for those guys and their progressions to, you know, maybe not go in so wide-eyed down at their first time at the NCAA tournament, be able to come away and continue to elevate this program with those two guys. What do they need to do this summer to really hone in on their skills?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's just, I think, you know, this season was definitely, you know, eye-opening for both of them. And, you know, I think they learned a lot, you know, over these past 2 years of kind of what it takes to really reach your goals at the end of the season, you know. And obviously with Moshe being at the tournament this year, you know, you really saw his eyes kind of open a little bit to, you know, really seeing and believing that, hey, you know, I belong here. I can be wrestling here on Saturday night. And, you know, they both needed to just continue to do what they're doing. I mean, they're doing a great job for us along with a lot of our other younger kids as well. And, you know, just believe in, you know, in themselves and have that, that unwilling faith that, you know, hey, you know, 365 days from now, we're going to be back in the same opportunity and just do everything in their power to get ready to go.
When you look at wrestlers, from my perspective as a basketball guy, when I was, you know, practicing at the same time a lot of our wrestlers were in high school, they had a lot of interesting pre-match rituals or superstitions. What's maybe one of the guys on the team that has maybe the weirdest or most unusual pre-match ritual that they've got to do before they get ready to go?
Oh, man. I mean, you know, the scope is just so wide. I mean, you know, some guys, I mean, just from an intensity level, I mean, some guys need to get really worked up before they go out and compete. Other guys, you know, they want to be calm, cool, and collected. So, I mean, it is very different. I mean, the guy that probably has the, you know, the most, you know, not even unique, but just, you know, most consistent pre-match routine is probably Andrew Alaris. You know, I mean, he likes to take his time, you know, make sure everything's kind of perfect going into that match. You know, he usually will try to jump on the mat a little bit early, and, you know, he always kind of crouches down on his knees a little bit, and, you know, just kind of likes to get a little blood into those legs and just, you know, feel that little bit extra pop. So he likes to take a little bit extra time there and just, you know, feel that burn before it actually gets going.
Well, he obviously had a great season as well, and again, look forward to him getting back from the injury and getting it 100%. But let's talk a little bit about it. You mentioned a little bit, but the forward thinking with this program now, we've talked recruiting. You always want to lock down the state of Colorado with the potential there. But how do you move this group forward from, you know, a top 25 ranking for the first time in 51 years? You had your best finish at the Big 12 championships, and you again qualify those four guys to the national tournament. Big picture on your thoughts, you know, how do you continue to move the needle this summer, bring the guys in to help this program get to where you want it to take it?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just, you know, again, I mean, everybody needs a break, right? We're going to take a break for about a week or two here and really kind of just, you know, just take some time off, you know, and take that breather and step back a little bit. And, you know, I know some of these guys, they're anxious and they're hungry to get back after, but I think everybody needs that little bit of time. So we're going to take some time right now. And then in a couple weeks here, we'll get right back after it and, you know, getting ready for the season. And, you know, most of these guys have been pretty committed to, you know, staying in town over the summers and really getting into the training and, you know, the preparation that they're going to need to be ready for next season. So we'll stay consistent with that plan and just continue to move ahead.
How has the COVID and how have that really hindered the recruiting efforts for your end? Have you seen a difference or how has it changed in the way that you have to approach recruiting?
I mean, it's changed in a lot of ways. I don't know that it's hindered us at all. I mean, I feel really strongly about the class that we have coming in. You know, we're not done yet. You know, we're looking to bring in a few more kids this spring season, you know, maybe a couple transfers. But, you know, I think the big thing is just a lot of these kids, you know, haven't seen campus yet, you know, firsthand. And, you know, that's going to be different. But, you know, again, I mean, we've been able to, you know, really get our vision across to these recruits and, you know, show them what it means to be a UNC Bear and, you know, all the amenities that we have for these student athletes and how they can reach their goals here. So, you know, it's just been different. You know, I don't know if it's, you know, been good or bad for us, but it's just been different in a lot of ways. But, you know, my coaching staff has done a great job of, you know, just making sure that we identify that right talent and, you know, get them in the doors and get them ready to compete.
Coach, obviously always great talking to you. You mentioned the break that everybody needs. And I can't imagine after a year like this with just the uncertainty of everything, how everybody just needs to decompress a little bit. Coach, we always appreciate your time and wish you best of luck moving forward here with Bears Wrestling.
Thank you, Jason.
Head coach Troy Nickerson of UNC Wrestling right here on Inside the Bears Den. We'll continue with more next. You're listening to Inside the Bears Den on 1310 KFKA. We're back now on 1310 KFKA, your home for all things Northern Colorado Athletics. On Inside the Bears Den, joined now by head soccer coach Tim Barrera. And coach, this season has been a little weird to begin with the COVID protocols and everything else, but throw a major snowstorm into the wrinkles, and it's kind of been a topsy-turvy start to the season as the opening weekend of Big Sky play against Southern Utah was canceled, but you guys were able to rebound against Idaho State, get a couple road wins. How has it been just navigating so far with not just COVID protocols, but obviously the weather that has come into play as well?
Well, I think we knew coming in that the spring as a season is tough. We always see Carl from baseball, and when the weather comes in, which it does in the spring, I'm like, oh, looks like baseball weather. You must have a home game coming up. So we know that the weather is always going to be a potential issue. We had some great weather, gotten back out on our field, away from the turf. And then the storm came in. Now, it showed up a little late. We had hoped to try to at least get the Friday game in, but Southern Utah had difficulty finding a flight out on either Friday night or Saturday morning. First weekend of spring break around here makes it tough. So that was a big bummer. And then with the amount of snow we got, and it was a heavy, wet snow, we had to go inside for the 3 days of practice last week. So we hadn't been on a proper-sized field for a week before we got to Idaho. So I was really pleased with how the players played in on the weekend to get a couple wins.
How does that, you know, affect the game plan, the game prep, you know, when you're expecting to be out there on a full-size field and run some of your set plays or you know, work on corner kicks or whatever the case may be? How does it just compare to go inside and have to adjust on the fly? And what does that do to throw into your game plan?
Well, I think the toughest things we ran into were just a little bit of the timing of things and how we play. We have an experienced team. So one of the goals, for example, we scored on Friday was off a free kick. It was a fifth year senior to a junior. So they've done that before. You know, so some of those things weren't too tough. It's really just kind of getting in the rhythm of playing. And since Idaho State, they have a brand new field, but with weather, their field's not ready. So we had to play on their football practice field, which is 10-year-old synthetic surface. So it just changes the way the game's played. It's, the ball's bouncing a lot, rolls and rolls and rolls. So those are some of the things that we had to adjust to, but the team's pretty resilient, and I thought we controlled both matches pretty well. Probably could have scored a little bit more, but I think we gave up one shot on goal between the two games. And, you know, to be fair, they're a newer team, younger team, new coach in a second year. So there's, they're going through a transition, but anytime you went on the road in the Big Sky, those are good wins, especially when your season gets cut down to six games, which we're at right now.
Well, that's what I was going to say is you've got such a small window to get these wins, and with the series against Southern Utah being canceled, you got to try to maximize your wins as you can, and stealing those two on the road and coming away with a sweep. I know when I was part of the basketball team, you always tried to get those road sweeps. You like even just getting a split, but to go up and sweep on the road is huge for the program. Now you have another extended break here before getting back out on the pitch there. Again, a week-long break before you get set to face off against Northern Arizona there at home. How do you utilize this practice time for you guys to get ready for that game against the Lumberjacks?
Well, it's kind of a combination of trying to keep them sharp, getting some rest for a couple players that got dinged up a little bit, but also letting the players compete. We're I think a pretty deep roster, and so even making in-game substitutions, but also picking our travel roster, those are tough decisions, and it was sort of difficult without having really played for a week of training. So we'll let them get after each other a little bit. Obviously they'd much rather be playing this coming weekend than get in that rhythm, but everybody's got a bye week and this just happens to be ours. So it's also a little different because as you know, the Bears are hosting the volleyball championship. So our games, instead of being Friday, Sunday, and Sunday's Easter Sunday, our games get moved to Saturday, Monday. So again, a little bit, and a lot of times the extra day's rest would be good, but since we're coming off the bye week, it's, not necessarily a good thing, but it certainly gives us an opportunity to be prepared for the Lumberjacks.
Coach, when you came to UNC years ago, did you envision 200 victories at this institution, and obviously a milestone win there in that first game against Idaho State?
Well, no, I certainly wasn't thinking that far ahead. If I'd kept it up as we did the first year, I got it a lot sooner. But no, I think it's just one of those things where, you don't even really think about it. And then all of a sudden there it is, 20 plus years later. But we've had a ton of great players through here, a lot of fantastic assistant coaches. We had to fight through some tough years like we all did through the reclassification years. But, I think we've done well in the Big Sky and challenge ourselves in the non-conference. And, it's just one of those things. I guess if you're around long enough, it comes. But certainly proud of it for all the great student athletes we've had through the program through the years.
You mentioned the non-conference. You played DU and CU. How do you think they helped prepare you for this Big Sky play and get you ready for this season?
Well, certainly DU is real early, and we kind of managed the, scripted it out and managed the minutes, but it certainly did help because that was a game on a synthetic field. So that's what we ran into over the weekend. And D is a good team. I think they're top of the Summer League and receiving votes in the national poll. And then CU plays a little bit differently. We had to play them on a 20-degree weather on frozen ground. Where they hurt us was, as we got a little bit tired late in the match, we lost a little bit of focus, and a team like that makes you pay. So I certainly learned, got some good things out of both matches, but certainly plenty of things to learn. And then took a month plus off. But again, fortunate that we have an experienced team. We've got 10 starters back from the 2019 team, 7 starters back from the 2018 team. So, it's an experienced team that can deal with some of these variables that come up into play. And I know they were happy with a couple wins and certainly how we defended. And looking forward to playing NAU when that comes.
You mentioned the happiness, and I just think they've got to have been elated just to get back out and play after, as you said, a month off. And some of the things that we've seen with basketball where teams have been shut down and games have been canceled, it just had to be so refreshing for your kids to get the opportunity to compete against somebody else.
Yeah, no question. We had an exhibition, a non-conference game against Carter School of Mines that we're going to play at home on the turf that got canceled. So we've dealt a little bit with that too. We've had, a pause or two as well. The players have been doing their, due diligence best they can to stay as healthy as they can and safe as they can. And, you also have to deal with, waiting for the test results to come back. We've had, obviously with the different teams, you never know when someone might test positive. So even just getting out of the road, getting to the airport and doing all the protocols and getting everything right, prepare for that, and then you wait for the test results. And, we had one of our players who didn't get the result till 4 a.m. Now she's been vaccinated, so she wasn't concerned, but you always just worry in the back of your mind that they lost a test or something. So it was exciting for them to, actually get to the airport and get on the road, and more importantly, to play a Big Sky game. That's what we all year long from last fall to now, we're just preparing for the Big Sky. And even it's a shorter schedule. All those games are extremely important, and I know the players are excited to compete.
Well, Coach, next game up is April 3rd and April 5th, as you mentioned there, at home against Northern Arizona. Coach, always appreciate your time here inside the Bears Den.
All right. Thanks so much. Really appreciate it.
Head Coach Tim Barrera of UNC Soccer will continue with Lindsey Oates next. You're listening to Inside the Bears Den on 1310 KFKA. We wrap things up here on this edition of Inside the Bears Den, joined now by head volleyball coach Lindsey Oates. And Coach, regular season wrapped up 13-3. You've won 6 straight contests. Had to adjust a little bit in that series against Northern Arizona, playing basically a doubleheader there a couple weeks back. How do you feel about getting this far into the basically almost the finish line of this season here for the Big Sky Conference? And how do you feel overall about your team's performance?
Well, I would say we're pretty solid. I like where we're headed in the last 6 matches. I think we continue to get better. The Weber State series, that's 2 of our 3 losses, was a little bit of a hiccup for us. They're a very good team. They're the team that ends up winning it. But we certainly had our chances in that second match to sweep them up 2-0 and then let that slip away. So we would have won the conference had we won that match in 3. With the tiebreaker. So, we're that close to the championship. I like where we'll be going into the tournament, especially on our home court. And then our other loss was against Montana State, the very first match of the season. So, I like where we're headed, that we keep getting better, especially since our Weber State weekend. We've had a really good turnaround and just great growth since that weekend.
Coach, what are those matches against Northern Arizona? You were down in that match and had to come back and win the final 2 sets to come away in 5. What was it about the turning point in that match that you were able to overcome and come away with that victory, especially as we mentioned, with it being such a weird turnaround and then playing them a few hours later?
Yeah, definitely a weird match because of the big snowstorm we had to have a doubleheader. So it was key to get that first one. We felt pretty confident for the second one, being a veteran team, being very fit. I liked our mentality that if we could sneak out that first one, I liked our chances in the second one. But that one going 5, it was important. And we had a great comeback, as you said. I think our serving and passing was the key. We continued to serve really aggressive, and that just kept them just enough uncomfortable to kind of give us an edge in that match.
You talk about the passing, and we all kind of know that it starts with that first initial contact, and Kendall Feather has been named Defensive Player of the Week in the Big Sky Conference once again, and she had some pretty big shoes to fill with the departure of Taylor Ells. Talk a little bit about her development, her growth here in that libero position.
She did, yeah. Taylor Ells was left some big shoes to fill, for sure. Kendall Feather played quite a bit last year, and even her freshman year, but was consistent in our starting lineup last year as a defensive specialist, and so was ready to fill that role. She's an exceptional third receiver. That's what skill she brings at the highest level, and then has a good serve and is a good defender as well. But, yeah, against Northern Arizona, had a really good week, and, you know, followed that up with several more matches since. Idaho State was also a great weekend for her, which is a lot of digs. So when she can dial in hitters and get in a rhythm, she's tough to score on.
You talked a little bit earlier about Weber State and how you had the opportunity to come away with a victory there with the Big Sky Tournament at home in the friendly confines of Bank of Colorado Arena. How confident do you guys feel going in, knowing you've been there, you've done that, you're the defending conference champion, and how much does the experience play on what you can bring for the conference championships?
Yeah, it's a fine balance there. I think we're certainly not overconfident. That's not a concern. We're trying to kind of convince our team in some ways that we can repeat, or, you know, that it is a fresh year and that we can do it again. You know, we were undefeated on the road, and all three of our losses came at home. So I don't think we kind of have that mental edge necessarily of that we just, you know, play lights out at home. Our Weber State and Montana State losses came at Bank of Colorado Arena. So those teams are confident coming in here. But I certainly wouldn't pick any other place to play. I still want it on my home court when you get to choose. So that'll be nice to be able to sleep in our own beds and, you know, have a whole week of practice in there, get comfortable, and then it's just going to be the best team wins the matches.
A little bit different, again, just being able to get to the finish line for this season. One of the things that was different for volleyball is it was kind of, I guess, decided upon, from my understanding, that you guys would play in masks. How was that affected, or how have the players adapted to having to play in masks and being out there, and is it been a cause of concern at all ever throughout the season?
It's not a cause of concern. You know, throughout the whole season, we only had two series canceled total throughout the whole conference. We didn't have any matches canceled. You know, maybe masks is a piece of that. There's so much that's unknown. But they felt like because we weren't testing as much that we needed to wear masks, unlike basketball. So the nice thing going into tournament week, we will be testing every day. Excuse me. So that means that we do not have to wear the masks come tournament time. So even in practice this week and matches at the tournament, no teams will be wearing masks. Or it's not required by the conference. I guess the school could require their own team to wear masks, but it will not be required by the conference. And at the NCAA tournament, they will not be requiring it. So we're over a little bit of a hurdle there. But, you know, it's one thing for coaches standing on the sideline to be in masks, or even the bench players. It's another thing to be playing as hard as they are and breathing hard and jumping and diving with their masks on. So I'm glad we're able to kind of hurdle that.
Another thing that was kind of different this season is, instead of switching sides, which is standard procedure in volleyball, you guys just stayed on the one side. Did that have, was that had an adjustment for you as a coach that has been so long, you know, been used to switching and changing sides, and any positives, disadvantages to that here this season?
No, not in any of the places that we played, which is only, you know, four away locations and then our home court. In some facilities, that may be an impact, and it certainly has a more of an impact if there is a crowd there, because then maybe you're by the student section the whole time, or there's things like that. But without crowds, and gyms are pretty standard, I don't know that it made much of an impact at all to not switch sides.
Well, Coach, it's been a great year for you. Again, 13-3, primed yourself as the number two seed going into the Big Sky Conference Tournament. You have that at home. We look forward to seeing what you can do there starting next Wednesday in the Big Sky Conference Tournament.
Thank you. We're looking forward to it.
Head Coach Lindsay Oates right here inside the Bears Den. I want to thank all our great guests. Larry Weir talking a little Eastern Washington Big Sky Conference basketball news with the season just coming to an end. Again, Tim Barrera notching his 200th win as head soccer coach for Northern Colorado. And Troy Nickerson recapping Bears wrestling all season long. You've been listening to Inside the Bears Den on 1310 KFKA.